Hey everyone, welcome in to another daily editorial here on the KE Report. We are chatting with Mark Chandler, managing partner at Bannockburn Global Forex, also writes the Mark to Market blog. I will link that blog below this interview. Mark, couple key stories to really recap from this week. It was a busy week on the news front and on the central bank meeting front, as well as market volatility. We're going to start off over in China with this Evergrande, I guess, continuing saga here. And the big development at the tail end of the week is that Evergrande missed their most recent interest payment. They're not going down, at least right now, the road to default, but that's definitely on the table. And really, we don't know what the Chinese government is going to do in terms of stepping in, potentially helping the company, potentially just letting them fail. Mark, what do you think is important to understand about the developments this week from this Evergrande saga?
Yeah, so probably the first thing is, you know, on Monday, as the week opened up and China was on holiday, we had these sharply lower openings, like gap lower openings in the U.S. major indices. And people were running around town saying this was a Lehman moment and like the sky was falling. But in truth, the stock market, of course, climbed back subsequently. And it looks like the Evergrande situation looks like it's contained. That is foreign direct exposure. So a few banks do have exposure. A few of the large global banks have exposure, but it's rather modest. And it looks to me like, yes, they missed a coupon payment. They missed a dollar coupon payment. It looks like they were able to get some kind of agreement to make the RMB payment. But remember how these kind of things work with these covenants that, you know, you miss a payment. Think about our credit cards. Even if you're a day late with the credit card, they don't necessarily sock you with big fees right away. They don't consider you in default. And the same thing with these types of bonds. There's a 30-day grace period. But I would imagine that in the next 30 days that there's going to be a clearer signal from China. And that's really what this is a bet on is whether Beijing can have an orderly unwind. And remember, it's not just market mechanisms. And they're not bothered by, like we were in the United States or in Europe, with the kind of, whether it's a bank or an investment bank, commercial bank, there's the private sector and there's the government in China. And I think that'll allow them to like ring fence this, break this up. More importantly, probably is in the longer run, what does this mean about this kind of accumulation engine? You think about the property development space, real estate in China, the whole ecosystem was worth about 30% of their GDP. So what's going to replace that? And in a big picture, my sense is something like this. China doesn't necessarily want to replace it, but the idea of like curbing speculation, but bringing that sector, such an important sector, basically back under the control of the Chinese Communist Party. So I think that model of accumulation, that cash register, might be up just the same way that after the crisis of 2008-2009 in the U.S., real estate for many years went through like the doldrums. It wasn't really the vehicle for speculation. So in the U.S., we'll get the Case-Shiller home prices again next week, and we're looking at record increases in U.S. home prices, also out of the reach of many middle-class families. But bottom line here with the Evergrande story, it looks like it's contained. It's not fully for sure yet, but that's what it looks like. And I think that that's partly why the U.S. stock market and risk appetites returned after what I think was sort of an exaggerated panic attack. Individuals can get panic attacks. It looks like the market had a panic attack on Monday and has recouped most of what it lost.
So, Mark, you even made the reference back to about 2008 in the U.S. when the mortgage crisis hit and pulled everything down with it. We're obviously getting a lot of those comparisons now coming out of China and saying, look, China has grown so big, and this Evergrande issue is so large that it could pull the whole market down, cause another liquidity squeeze, essentially cause a contagion effect stretching to many different markets. Do you think that's actually going to happen, or do you truly believe that this is contained now?
Yeah, you know, I was probably one of those people who, like, at first when the financial crisis hit in the U.S., I thought, well, maybe it could be contained too. But I think that China, because it's, you know, it's sort of like because they have the workers get wages, some people say they're capitalist. Because they have markets, people say, well, they're capitalist. And I'm not so sure that that's like the best model. I think that because of the power of, say, moral suasion, China can do things think about what happens when they have a couple of years ago, they had a horrible snowstorm and they had to like move like several million people. Imagine how long it would take like the U.S. or a European country or Canada to do that. And so I think that because of this, because of their authoritarian state, they can do things, and I think that will help them contain the problem. At the same time, they're disciplining. They, you know, people are going to have their fingers burnt. It might not be the state-owned banks, but a lot of people who speculated are going to feel like their fingers have been burnt, and you know, and it, creating that scar tissue, making them hesitant to do so again.
Well, Mark, just shifting over to some other news for the week, we had the Fed meet in September here. Everybody was awaiting it, and it kind of, in my opinion, was a nothing burger because they didn't really announce any major changes. Most everybody has their eyes on the meeting minutes for October, but really the next time we're going to see a meeting from the Fed is in November. A lot of people are of the opinion that, hey, that's when they're going to announce whether they do something with the tapering. The market reactions, though, were pretty interesting. I'd love to get your thoughts on it. We saw, you know, market volatility around both sides of it and a lot of knee-jerk reactions one direction and then the opposite direction in a lot of different markets. What was your takeaway from the Fed meeting this week?
Yeah, I thought that last week I gave you a pretty good heads up of what was going to happen, and that was going to be the Fed would give us another step towards tapering without actually saying exactly when to begin. And I thought that they would have more Fed officials looking for a hike next year. Both of those things materialized, but the big surprise, and I think this is why, Chad, the markets turned sort of in the middle. They had one reaction, and then they had the opposite reaction. And I think that the big news, that it sounds very subtle, but it's very significant, and that is when Powell said that in some ways he said, we're not going to be able to tell you the exact time we're going to start the tapering, but I feel confident it's going to end around the middle of next year. He didn't use exactly those words, but he did say tapering would be over sometime around the middle of next year. That is very important, and that changed the way the market responded. And the reason that's important is because you got to like think about it backwards. What the Federal Reserve wants to do is preserve the maximum amount of its flexibility. Preserving the maximum amount of flexibility means to leave open the possibility, just in case inflation is not temporary, that they may have to hike rates twice next year. And how to preserve that flexibility is to finish tapering in the first part of the year, pause, and then you can hike rates in September, and then again in December if you need to. That's how to preserve the flexibility. And so I think, I mean, someone like myself, I think, follow the Fed closely, was amazed, surprised that Powell would give us an end date before he gave us a start date. And what this means then is that the market is already moving in this direction to price in a September rate hike for next year. And when I look at the December contract, the December Fed funds futures, right now it's yielding 30 basis points. At 23 basis points, that is fair value for one rate hike. That is yielding 30 basis points tells me that it's 7 basis points of a second rate hike. 7 basis points out of 25, so it's a little bit more than a third of a chance of a second hike next year being priced in to the Fed funds futures. Now, I know you can talk about the 10-year bond or the 2-year. For me, the Fed funds futures is the closest. You know, we're looking for a very close proxy, and the closest proxy we can find is the Fed funds futures, I think. And so that's why I think that the announcement was important. But I agree with you, 99% of it was as expected. It was this little subtle thing about when they will be done with tapering, which they haven't begun yet. So that's why I think it's important, and I think that's why the reaction at the short end of the curve. The thing about the long end of the curve, at the end of the day, the U.S. 10-year yield is up again further today, and I think we got to find a new equilibrium here. And part of the issue is, if you think the Federal Reserve is going to be raising rates a year from now, you want to begin, locking in long-term mortgages. And so what we saw happening this week is there's huge mortgage originations, over $14 billion. And so what happens when these mortgages are originated is that someone who's got them on their books has to protect themselves. And how do they protect themselves? They hedge. And they hedge by selling U.S. treasuries. And so we want to be careful here that that there is the Fed, there is the Fed that's changed things, and that's producing a change in people's behavior, mortgage originations, and that also then it has like a secondary impact on prices. My best guess is that next week we don't have a lot of U.S. economic data, and the market's going to be fishing for the upper end of the new equilibrium range for our yields, and that'll take into account Fed. We'll also take into account what we talked about earlier too, is the rise in oil prices. They're up about 3% this week, 9% for the month. So we're talking about $74, $75 a barrel for oil. That also adds to inflation expectations. So there's some moving pieces here besides the Fed to keep an eye on as well.
The thing is, though, Mark, a year out is an eternity in the way that the markets view time and, quite frankly, just what the world has been through in the last about year and a half. A year out, I know a lot of people are going to say, well, even with those dot plots, they've been wrong before. So we'll see what the Fed can follow through with. But look, the Fed does look like they are going to start unwinding some of their purchases. And who knows, if they do even get to a rate hike, do you see that directly impacting the markets then? If the Fed pulls out some liquidity, are the markets going to suffer rather than continue to grind higher and have everybody seem to play that buy the dip strategy?
Yeah, and I think you hit the right tone there. The idea that we don't have a lot of experience with unwinding QE and the tapering, and of course everybody remembers the 2013 taper tantrum, but this time it looks different. Partly, I'd say the Federal Reserve is not surprising the market when they announce barring a big downward shock on employment, the Fed will taper, will announce its tapering next month, may begin it next month. I don't think that in itself is, I think the market is market's pricing that in. So I don't think that'll hurt. I think that other countries, and we've seen that this week with Norway being the first of the G10 countries to raise interest rates, other countries are also turning their monetary cycle. So that's moving in the right direction as well. Emerging markets, when everything's said and done, they've held up very well this week. Of course, with some exceptions, Turkey, last time we were talking, last week I mentioned that Turkey might cut interest rates. They cut 100 basis points. I thought they'd cut 50 at the most, and the Turkish lira fell to new record lows. But for the most part, the emerging market currencies have held in pretty well. Emerging market equities have held in after that Monday panic attack. So right now, I'd say the risk of a taper tantrum still seems to be relatively light.
Well, Mark, you brought up some of the other central bank activity this week, and it was a full week. There was about 12 different meetings from the bank, as we highlighted last week. The Bank of Norway also hiked. But one that stood out that we had talked about off mic was what happened with the Bank of England. So my question is, do you think any of these other banks that are starting to tighten and get more hawkish are going to pave the way for the Fed to possibly hike a little earlier? And what did you make of the Bank of England getting a bit more hawkish?
Yeah, I think that, when I was in Washington, I think that the officials that I speak to, they don't really care about what Norway does or New Zealand as far as rate policy. I think that on their radar screen is really three countries, three areas, three central banks, the PBOC from China, the ECB from the Eurozone, and the Bank of Japan. And the ECB and the BOJ are clearly going to be laggards in this monetary cycle. It looks like China has already cut reserve requirements. Many people suspect that as a fallout from Evergrande and the weakening of their own economy, that China will ease policy again. Be careful, though, there, because, that first full week in October, they're closed that whole week. But I think you're right. The Bank of England was the in some ways, it was even more shocking than Powell's admission of done with the tapering by the middle of the year. What the Bank of England essentially said was that if they have to raise interest rates, they would do so even if they're still buying bonds. Now, this was 24 hours, less than 24 hours after Powell was asked that question. And he said, no, they would speed up the tapering rather than raise interest rates while they were still buying bonds. He thought it was like a contradiction. But the Bank of England, by saying that, what we know for a fact is that the Bank of England will be winding down. They hope to finish their QE by the end of this year. So the only way that they'd be raising rates while they're still doing QE is if it happens this year. And so the market knew, understood what the Bank of England was saying, and that is that they opened up the door to a possible rate hike this year, and they took sterling sharply higher, and they took short-term UK rates sharply higher as well. I suspect it's an overreaction. I'm not sure what the Bank of England's thinking, but you know, they've got this furlough program, which is this wage subsidy program, and that's going to finish up next week. But there's almost 6% of their workforce is on it. So, you know, we talked about before the great amount of uncertainty. This is part of that uncertainty. And so I feel very confident the Bank of England will not raise rates this year. But the market is pricing, beginning to price in some odds of that. But what they're really doing is raising the odds of rate hikes, not just one, but two, starting in Q1 next year. To me, one of the remarkable things is that the U.S. dollar is having a decent week, rising against most of the major currencies. And, of course, the Evergrande sort of panic attack in the beginning of the week and the Fed in the second half of the week all helping that. And you think that the higher interest rates supported for the dollar, the British pound, we've had a bigger jump in their interest rates than we've seen in the United States. Sterling is among the weakest currencies this week, only maybe second to the Japanese yen, which is, of course, very sensitive to the U.S. rate story.
You know what, Mark? It's an interesting world that we're in right now where we do have majority, if not all of the central banks now, at least talking about unwinding some of their easing programs and some of the smaller central banks going through rate hikes. It's an environment that all investors need to understand. Has come. We don't know how it's going to progress because, boy, oh boy, these central banks sure like to talk about policy before actually even changing policy. But that is the environment right now. And markets, they are also seemingly a bit confused and a bit chaotic when it comes to these policies because, again, we're not getting from, at least from some of the big guys, actual policy changes. But seems like next year, 2022, is going to be crucial for the follow-through, really, from a lot of the comments we've heard from central banks, something we'll undoubtedly keep an eye on. But it was actually quite nice just to get out of this week with all the volatility in markets, and we'll see where next week goes, because next week, very importantly, end of the month and end of the quarter closes. So we'll be recapping those levels next week. Mark, great chatting with you, buddy. We'll chat again next week. Have a great weekend.
Good luck. Thanks. Good luck to everybody.